Hey, I'm just letting you know that in February 2023, I am speaking at my friend Andy Storch's event in Sonoma, California. It's called the Talent Development Think Tank. I'll be running a session on marketing your workshops. And on day three, I'll be hosting the 2-hour workshop blueprint session. I'd love to see you there. Head on over to leannehughes.com/thinktank. Enjoy the episode. Coming up next on Leanne Hughes's Work and Live Large.
And but as soon as if you're trying to change that cultural norm, you will be forever frustrated because that is an element that's ingrained socially. And that's beyond, you know, team or business leadership. I mean, accepting those and finding a way to be effective within that is our responsibility in, you know, leading those organizations and hopefully leaving them in better shape when we move on than when we got there. So I absolutely have loved doing that. And I learned a lot along the way, you know, new foods, new languages, new cultures. It's an amazing experience.
Life's too short. You're here to work and live large. Here's your host with nothing to lose, Leanne Hughes.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you imagine what's possible is possible for you. Today's guest does just that in terms of inspiring what is possible. In fact, I was on the end of this conversation thinking, oh my gosh, maybe we should move internationally right now. It just makes it so accessible, really showing what the possibilities are in terms of growing your career, growing your perspective on life, gaining insight into other cultures and what brings them happiness, and really what's important in life. In this conversation, I chat to John McKendry, who is a senior healthcare executive with over 20 years of experience in the biopharmaceutical, medtech, and health tech industries. John and I met through a gig we worked on together a couple of years ago, coaching pharmaceutical leaders. I think it was back in 2020. So John had this really interesting space in his career where he took some time to evaluate what he wanted to do next. And that's why I brought him onto the show. Prior to joining his current role with KYE, John was CEO of a global growth stage medical supplies company. And for the past 2 years, he has been providing independent advisory on assisting the growth and commercial development of early stage health tech startups in Southeast Asia. He has deep knowledge of the pharma industry based on 19 years with Pfizer. And in this chat, you'll hear his experience in roles which had really high attrition rates and turning that around through his time by building culture. So I actually asked him, like, how do you do that? He'll also share what inspired the decision for his family, shout out to Catherine, to leave their home of Canada to work internationally. And honestly, you'll be inspired to do the same thing. So just a warning that you might be grabbing your passport and suitcase as you listen to this conversation, ready to make your big move. This podcast is called Work and Live Large, and this conversation really reflects that philosophy, recognizing that you can make a decision and have chapters in your life where you have containers where you decide, yes, I'll spend the next 5 years focused on this, and then who knows what will happen after that, as well as the importance of giving yourself the space to really think about what drives you, what you value, and how you can incorporate and leverage that into your next career steps. John also calls himself a frustrated optimist. I've got to say, ever since this conversation, I've been using that because I understand what that looks like in terms of joining companies, seeing the opportunities and just trying to make things happen because you're asking the question of what would it look like if this occurred? So if you're a frustrated optimist, you're in the right place. And if you're not, listen in for inspiration on what that sounds like. You're going to love this conversation. A link to connect with John on LinkedIn is in the show notes for this episode over at podcast.leannehughes.com. That's it for me. Now onto the show. I'm so excited to welcome onto the podcast, John McKendry. John, it's so delightful to talk to you again.
Wonderful to be here, Leanne. Thank you so much for the invitation. Anyone that's engaged with you as I have leaves those conversations more energized than they came in. So I really love your optimism and love what you're doing with the podcast.
Oh, thank you. And a little bit of pressure there. So we'll have a delightful conversation today. John, you're dialing in from Canada, but we've been corresponding when you've been in my time zone in the APAC region. I know a bit about your story, but I'd love you to share a bit about your career history, your life, if you can. Maybe just talking through some of the pivot moments in your career that got you to where you are today.
Yeah, no, listen, I'll hit a few high points and those pivot points and let me know where we can add some more color. So originally from Canada, started in with the pharmaceutical industry many years ago in Canada. Loved it. I mean, it's an industry with a great source of family and friend debates over the Christmas table or Thanksgiving table. an industry with a noble purpose, and I love the connection with healthcare. That's just something I'm personally passionate about. Grew through a number of roles, commercial roles with the industry in Canada, just trying to find ways to improve access to medicines. And at a certain point, had sort of felt after discussions with some career champions and mentors that, you know, the next stage of growth on many levels would be to just get experience internationally. And went through a few, maybe one major pivot point was when I was decided to go international. And you have those conversations with the family, because the family's got to be all in as well. And everybody's on board. And then we look for opportunities, and was in some parallel processes around the world. And the one that was the most different to life in Montreal and life in Canada was to an opportunity that came up in Hong Kong. And that one, neither my wife or I had ever been to Hong Kong. We'd never traveled in Asia. And that was part of the attractiveness of just taking the leap and going for it, knowing full well that, you know, Canada wasn't going to go anywhere. We could always go home. And we got rid of all of our possessions. We weren't renting the house. We just left Canada completely with no plan of when or how we would return and move there. So loved it there for a couple of years, then went on to another role in Malaysia. So another international move, Kuala Lumpur, which was a fantastic experience. 3.5 years living in this emerging economy, wonderful people, different culture, etc., and great food, by the way, for anyone that hasn't been to Malaysia.
Yes.
And was a country manager of business there, which was a tremendous opportunity to engage more externally and really shape an entire organization. And then the next career step, I guess, is on to Singapore, where we lived for 5 years. And I did a few different roles in Singapore. A couple of them were regional leadership roles in the pharmaceutical industry. After exiting the industry, decided to go to the other end of the spectrum, again, very intentionally, to simply try what I had always looked over the fence at doing, and work with entrepreneurs, early stage, seed, and Series A health tech companies. Loved it. Did that for a couple of years and realized, how I might be able to help, but also how much I admire these early stage entrepreneurs that just have a great idea, but are trying to figure out the commercial model. And then it came time to see how can I harness these sort of two buckets of my kind of career passion and experience to date, the love of healthcare, the 20 years of pharmaceutical industry experience around the world, and then this newfound passion for entrepreneurship and building early stage companies. And that's when we saw an opportunity to go full circle, move the family back to Canada for our sixth household move in 10 years, four of those international, and come back to a role that I'm currently in Canada, which is leading a very early growth stage pharmaceutical company that is in Canada. So anyway, wow. That's the sort of the arc. So far.
Yeah, it's such a great arc. And I mean, I met you sort of within that transition. It was really interesting hearing from you about deciding, like, what will you do next? And I think a lot of us look at, like, I would say you've been very successful in your career, and you think once someone knows that they've got this ladder, like, they'll be fine. But to know that there's times in your life where you actually have to sit back and reevaluate, how did you go through that process? You mentioned, oh, I realized it was my love of these two things. Was that very intentional? Did you do a lot of, like, metaphorical looking in the mirror? Were you journaling, or were you just like, nah, this is exactly what I want to do? What was your process?
Well, I wish it was as structured as you said. I guess in hindsight, I mean, I have a couple of loose structures I've used throughout my career. One is I very consciously reflect on my career in 5-year increments. That's just arbitrary, but that's the way I've always thought about it. To say that if I'm committing to a company or a path or a process, I'm all in for that 5-year period. And as we get closer to that 5-year horizon, let's rethink of whether we recommit again or not. And that way, for me, it helps me to avoid sort of shiny object syndrome of every cool new opportunity, flashy job posting that comes up. And then you can really dig in, have an impact, you know, show sustainable results in what you're doing. So that's been part of it. I think the other piece that is in that assessment model is got to be a balance between what makes sense, work with yourself personally and with the family. And so, you know, there's certain time points when it might make more sense for everybody to uproot and move, for example. But I think it's easier than many people who have been reticent to jump into that would think. I mean, I've encouraged so many people in career discussions to say, look, just take the leap, you know, go for that role or go to that country, give it a try. Imagine a world where most countries didn't require 2 years of military service, as much as I admire the great contributions of everyone who serves for their country. If every country required young people to serve 2 years living abroad in another culture or another country, whoa, what a different view we'd all have of each other, right? So that, you know, and you can always go back. When we left Canada, we said, okay, well, you know, we can move back to Canada. It's not going away. But of course, we loved it in Asia and stayed there 10 years and had a phenomenal time living and working there.
You're actually the worst person I could be talking right now to, because every time Chris and I go traveling, we're like, oh, we want to move here. We want to, like, every single country we just get in. And I mean, the only thing holding us back is, like, we've got dogs. That's the only, you couldn't really have pets and do what you do. What do you say to that?
That is tougher. It depends how long you stay in one place, of course, and what your pet is. but you know, dogs could be tough. You have to find a neighbor that has a dog or a friend there that you can walk the dog. And we did that at times as well.
Oh, that's awesome. And thanks for sharing. I was going to ask you, like, what is your advice for someone that's sort of thinking about taking the leap and moving overseas? And you've sort of minimized the risk and said, well, you can always go back. And that was your philosophy when you and your family moved, is like, okay, we'll give this the best go that we have, but we've also always got home.
Yes. And I think I was fortunate in that I was exposed to it early, which in hindsight probably created that thinking. I mean, there's watershed moments, not just in what we create, but I think, you know, you create watershed moments for your kids if you have them as well. And I think back to watershed moments from when I was a kid that weren't my decision making, but they influence the way you see the world later. And you know, when I was at grade 7, I skipped most of the year. Our family moved for the better part of the year to New Zealand, actually, closer to you, Leanne.
Yeah.
At least that part of the world. And we lived there while my dad was on a sabbatical section of time there. And in hindsight, you think, oh my gosh, like, you know, what a big move. But especially in those days, I mean, this is, you know, pre-internet of relocating an entire family. You know, pre-global shipping, we just went with our suitcases and that was it. And, you know, in hindsight, that probably made me more open to the ease of doing it with all of the bells and whistles that are available today with global travel, you know?
Yeah. There is really no excuse. We're so set up for it. You can book flights, you know, tomorrow. And even like prices for travel, it's very affordable if you do go somewhere and feel like you need to just duck back home to say hi to the people that you miss. Well, now that you can, 2 years on.
Yes.
I'm curious around, you've worked in various countries across Asia in leadership roles. And you spoke about travel really sort of expanding your mind. What did you learn, like, particularly as a people leader? Were there differences between the people you were leading in Hong Kong versus Malaysia versus what you were used to in Canada? Like, what did you do to sort of adjust your leadership style to really make that work in those regions?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And it was part of the personal challenge that I foresaw in moving to just very different markets is to, you know, you might have proven yourself successful as a leader in one culture that you're familiar with, but to then test that sort of cultural agility around not only can you work and get things done in a place where work norms are very different, work processes are different, but also, you know, can you do that in a repeated fashion? So, you know, one of the pieces that I learned early in that time was that there's far more, I mean, it sounds cliche, but there's far more in common than different with what everybody is aspiring to do, trying to do, the, you know, the careers they're building, the vision for their families that they're trying to put in place. And I think an important part of being an accepted and agile and effective cross-cultural leader is to simply appreciate and recognize the differences. You have to be aware of those and respectful of them, but you cannot let those differences be an excuse. Different teams, different cultures may be starting on a journey from different places, but the aspiration is directionally similar everywhere. And as soon as I think as soon as teams and businesses and groups of people realize that you are there to promote their success directionally in that journey, and not there to dictate that because something is done this way in country A, that it needs to be done that way here, then, you know, things open up and you have, you know, tremendous success. And that was my good fortune as well, and the experience that I had. And I tell you, some of those leadership opportunities throughout Southeast Asia are absolutely going to be the most memorable of my career, for sure.
Oh, that's so great. And I think, I mean, I remember when I was getting ready to run workshops across Hong Kong and India and Singapore, and I was like a little bit concerned around, I mean, we're not talking about leadership, but facilitating workshop, like what are the differences? And much like you said, John, it was more of a case of there's little nuances. Like in India, we were starting workshop at 9 o'clock, but that's when breakfast arrived. So we didn't really, and I was like, come on, when are we kicking this off? Hong Kong was very different, right? So everyone was there exactly on time or even before. But it's just like it was little nuances like that, little cultural things. But as you said, humans are humans, and the discussions were very similar. The challenges were very similar.
It's very, I mean, there, you can see across in different countries, for sure, culturally, there's differences. Like you said, I mean, certain countries where things absolutely start right on time every time, and other countries where they definitely do not start on time ever, you know? and that's France just the norm. That's right. So it's that. And, but as soon as, if you're trying to change that cultural norm, you will be forever frustrated, because that is an element that's ingrained socially. And that's beyond, you know, team or business leadership. I mean, accepting those and finding a way to be effective within that is our responsibility in, you know, leading those organizations and hopefully leaving them in better shape when we move on than when we got there. So I absolutely have loved doing that. And I learned a lot along the way, you know, new foods, new languages, new cultures. It's an amazing experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, I think we spoke last time, or was it a bit before, you were like mid-career, you're thinking like, I'm really going to hold out for the right opportunity. And I think that's an interesting thing for you to say, because a lot of us, when we are in between that liminal space between, you know, we've just finished something up and we kind of want to fill that time and be of value. And you had a different approach, like, I'm actually going to wait and hold out. Can you talk us through like how did you sort of keep that going? What were you going through that time? It seemed like a very strong and powerful statement. Emotionally, were you feeling that, or were you totally cool and zen underneath the surface?
I appreciate the zen diagnosis. I do remember back to that time when I left the corporate world and was able to take an exit. There was two possible paths at that time that would have been sort of more of the same. One was to, again, relocate the family and continue with sort of the mothership company that I was leaving. And the other was, before I'd even finished my leave or finished my notice period, there was a couple of opportunities that came up, of course, from the usual, you know, recruiting firms and things that knew that you were coming available in the market. And I had consciously made the decision that I was, A, not going to continue on for fear of, as much as I loved the company that I'd worked with, but for fear of, you know, Groundhog Day, in terms of, I saw this as a real opportunity, right? Where I could mid-career take a break, explore things that I, you know, hadn't had a chance when you're in corporate world to do professionally. You know, family time with my daughter as well, which was going to be super valuable. And it was very conscious that I would take a year and a half for sure of off and doing my own consulting work. And beyond that, we'd see where it would go. And during that time, after putting that sort of line in the sand of saying, I will take this break for these personal professional reasons, and I love it. And now I actively advocate to anybody that I'm coaching or talking to say, find a way to do this, because you may only get that one break in a career. And you have this opportunity to unleash your curiosity and pursue things that you had maybe seen from the sidelines flying by while you're racing a million miles an hour to somebody else's list of things to get done. You can dive into those, and that will color what you want to do next. And for me, it definitely did. I mean, I loved that experience of seeing these early stage Series A seed round health techs. And then as COVID hit, of course, there was a lot of excitement around, you know, health technology, because everybody in the planet was accessing healthcare through all these innovative tech ways that drove in funding and an explosion of health tech interest as well, which was really exciting. And only through that did I come to this realization that the thing I wanted to do next career-wise was to marry, you know, my love of healthcare and, you know, experience from pharmaceutical, but to not go back to a similar role at another multinational company, which is might be lucrative, it might be easier, it might make sense. But I don't feel I would have really been progressing myself further in doing that. Mm. And so certainly in coming to this role and bringing these two passions together, it's something new and I'm loving it. And I'm excited already about what does this experience over the next number of years open up in terms of what I would do in future. I don't know, but I leave it open.
Yeah. And I think I really like that you said that it actually required the space to even think about it. Cause I think, I don't know if you've heard that phrase, build it, like sort of fixing the plane while you're flying it. And sure. It's really hard to be quite kind of clear and get some, any type of clarity when you're in that. And I think just going in with curiosity, not knowing what was going to happen in that year and a half. But the other thing I want to pull out from that is often we talk about, you know, how uncertainty is, you know, people want certainty. And what I like, yes. You said it before, you created this sort of arbitrary timeline. It was the 5 years. And then even with this time off, it was the 18 months. And you put that end date to create certainty and clarity for you, even though there was a lot of ambiguity in that. I actually really like that. I've never thought of doing that. Maybe that's good, because I think a lot of the stuff that I do is like, oh, it's someday. But I think you do have to kind of force it, because you're not guaranteed, you know, how do we know what will happen in future? So it's nice to know that there is an end date on a project or.
Yes. Yeah, so someday is today, right? I mean, that's the it. Risk is if we're all planning for, you know, I'm going to travel when I retire, or I'm going to do X or Y someday. I mean, you know, we're often reminded of that when you see tragic events with friends and family around us who don't get that chance to realize that end date that they were going to, you know, enjoy all those things that have been put off. And I think it's our responsibility to remind ourselves. It's difficult to do. I mean, I don't discount it at all. And I totally understand why we get caught up in pushing things off until tomorrow. But you're right. Someday is today. And why not now, right? Is the right question to ask. Yeah. Because we don't know how many days we've got.
We don't know. Yeah. If not now, when? And I always go like, oh yeah, one day I'll settle down one day. And, you know, Chris and I just booked flights. We're going to the UK and the Philippines in November. But I think for the same reason, it's like, you've got to kind of force the issue. And I was just super pleased that even before COVID, I traveled far and wide because of, gosh, what had happened. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I think there's a lot of, you know, if we're, again, it comes down to goals. I mean, if you're true to yourself that, you know, goals in life are to, you know, I don't know, be happy and make an impact. I mean, it's, you know, there's some really fundamentals there that, you know, I've always been a frustrated optimist, I think is my profile. So, you know, that has served me well, because I have an optimism and aspiration that more is possible. And whatever the construct is, whether it's the boundaries of a company or, you know, other rules or guidelines, you know, push up against those intentionally if you're appropriately motivated, and you're motivated because of your optimism for things to improve or be better. You know, why shouldn't people have more access to medicine or better healthcare? There's ways that technology and companies and governments around the world can do that, even though all of the mechanisms are clunky and bureaucratic and awkward. And I mean, honestly, if you show me a place that has impact where it's easy to get things done, I'll go work there with you. You know, I mean, it's never easy, but the greatest opportunities are never easy, right? So engage as a frustrated optimist and, you know, progress, not perfection, right? So if you're directionally going in that right direction and you're pushing those boundaries for the right reasons, I think invariably you end up fulfilled and happier. And when you look in the rearview mirror, you see that there's a sustained impact that you leave behind for people and that you've worked with or you've supported. And so that's fulfilling. And that should be every day. I mean, that's what gets me out of bed.
I totally agree. I really like that phrase, frustrated optimist. I'm surprised it's not in your LinkedIn tagline. Hey, I wrote an article the other day about, I don't know, have you heard of the phrase quiet quitting?
Yes. Yes. Recently I've seen that. Yeah. That seems to be a new,
everyone's,
line. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what you're just like, so the article I was writing was very similar to what you just said about, I actually think it's because everyone's saying, from a mental health perspective, it's good to quietly quit. And I don't think so. I think it's good to have something you're purpose, like passionate about, you want to go all in for, you want to be fulfilled. That is actually better for your mental health than just actively going into third gear. What do you think about that?
I agree completely. The twist on it, I would think, is that maybe what people are, I would hope, what people can discover for themselves as to what is fulfilling is maybe different post-pandemic or post, you know, reality of how we all change the way we work, engage with people, you know, balance Zoom calls and Teams calls and time doing other things. So I think recalibrating what it is that gets you to that impactful, optimistic, you know, fulfilled, happy place is a necessary step after these changes. But we shouldn't discount that it shouldn't be sought after or achieved because of these recent changes. So I think I'm aligned with you on that one, Leanne, that I think it's a catchy phrase, but I hope that it doesn't trigger more people to accept that they shouldn't be doing what ultimately makes them feel good and fulfilled and make a difference in the world.
Yeah. Because I was seeing a lot of support for it. And I was like, oh, it's so interesting. And I mean, I've worked in government roles as well, where it's like, this is not a new phenomenon. Like, people have been quietly quitting around me for a while. So this is not just for Gen Z and millennials. Like, this has been happening for decades. I'm curious, something I talk about on the podcast is like a non-linear breakthrough where something happened to you and you're like, I just can't believe this is happening. It's like a bit of a pinch me moment. I mean, in your work or life, have you had any like experiences like that where something has happened and it's like, just, you couldn't believe it. You couldn't believe it's actually happened.
Yeah. There's a few. Some of them are more like sort of, you know, personal through travel and things and experiencing different things. And others are, you know, very central to work. You know, one that's absolutely impacted me is whether it's traveling around Southeast Asia or anywhere else in the world, I've always found the most impactful parts of those trips is whether you're in a small village in Laos or Cambodia, or you're in, you know, other, maybe a disenfranchised population on a beautiful tropical island in South Pacific or the Caribbean or East Africa. Invariably a common admirable denominator across all those experiences is how fundamentally happy people who don't have what we would say is material wealth can be. And that is a tremendous like wake-up moment, I think, for all of us in terms of what we're ultimately pursuing or accumulating, etc. So, you know, I think of one in particular when I was country manager of our business in Malaysia, where we would travel all over the region on one family trip we did to Borneo. And we went to Kuching. And from Kuching, you drive about So in Borneo, then you drive on this windy road for about 4 or 5 hours into the middle of the Borneo jungle to a reservoir from a dam that had been put in. Then you get into a longboat. You go up the river in a longboat, and you go to a very tourist, unaccessible village of longhouses of the traditional indigenous people that live in that part of the world. And you go to the longhouse, and the chief is there with the tattoos, all over his neck. He invites you into the longhouse, and he gives you the fermented alcohol that is being made called tuak, right? And the sign of acceptance and happiness as they serve up the tuak, which is pretty tough stuff to drink, but yeah. But I tell you, in seeing the happiness and how fulfilled people living with what would appear to be very simple means, I mean, those are our breakthrough moments. Because you come back from those trips and you look at all of the good fortune you have with in terms of material possessions, and you realize what right do we have to not be happy as well, and find a way when so many other people through seemingly more difficult circumstances clearly find a way to be fulfilled, have an impact, and be happy. So there's many of those experiences in villages all over the world. And on the work front, one watershed moment that I really enjoyed was, in my time with the organization in Malaysia, living in KL, I had the good fortune to work with an amazing team there. And when I arrived in the market, the engagement levels were very low with the team, right? There was there'd been a lot of change. And one of the mandates for myself in joining that organization was to say, well, how do we bring down attrition? How do we raise engagement? How do we make a sustainable cultural impact for this business going forward? And at the time, to give you a sense, attrition rates were 35 to 45% a year across a business of a couple of hundred people. And we put into place this, process plan with the leadership team. We tackled the issues, everything from compensation to engagement to communication and all the other six pillars to that plan. And had the great fortune to see, engagement scores soar, highest increases in APAC. Attrition rates dropped from double the industry average to half the industry average and remained there. And then when I moved on to speak less about what I did while I was there and more about the gratitude I have for this sustained impact, even in the years after that, those attrition rates and engagement levels were maintained. So those kind of those are experiences definitely that I've drawn on since then, and experiences that you have no idea that you're going to experience when you jump into a given situation. You can't prescribe that. It just has to happen in the moment. And then when it happens, you realize, wow, these are special moments in your career that you really look back fondly on. So those are some of the watershed moments.
Yeah. Those are awesome. Thank you so much. And before we go to the rapid round, I just want to double click on that comment regarding how you did. I mean, just curious, like what were some of the key levers? You mentioned engagement communication. Was there were there any sort of key levers you pulled to make that happen? And how long did that take? I'm super curious.
It was a great experience. So certainly communication was a big part of it. Just transparent communication, putting a priority. So typically many company plans have a few strategic pillars, and the final pillar might be something people related. We said, no, we're gonna flip this. Like, it's not a people as an add-on to the plan. It's gonna be people as the number one, because if we solve attrition, engagement, and productivity, all the numbers will sort themselves out. There won't be a vacancy. People will be engaged in what they're doing. They'll see their connection to the bigger picture. So how do we make sure that everybody in the organization sees that very clearly? Putting some clear metrics in place for the year and then just reporting on those through town hall and internal communications very transparently, what was working, what wasn't working. Mm-hmm. So many, many lessons came out of that in terms of culture building. The other piece, very openly, that was there is when I joined that organization, a number of members of the leadership team were people that were not from Malaysia. They were, the other expat people that have been moving around globally in the company or have been put into roles there. And of course, when my posting was announced, there was the natural questions around, oh, another expat coming in to lead the business. Why can it not be somebody from Malaysia? And my response to that at the time was, look, a measure of success for me in developing talent from any country is not whether or not the leader of that country is from the same country. It's let's see people from Malaysia in leadership roles around the world. Let's see more people in the regional office. Let's see people in New York. For sure, let's develop more people here so that we have less expats in the leadership team. And I'm, you know, happy to say that when I left the country three and a half years later, I was the last expat, you know, left, and that was, you know, not from Malaysia. We then had people in the regional office and in New York, you know, the head office that were from Malaysia. So, you know, that I think was an opportunity for people to think bigger, beyond the borders of their country and beyond the roles that they see every day that they interact with. That there's, you know, if you're in a large organization, especially these days when you can communicate, connect, and move so easily around the world, is don't hold yourself back to think about just the little postage stamp or sandbox that you're in. You know, think about all opportunity that you can access, and that's not bound by borders normally.
That is awesome. Actually, I've just got the name of your next book, or your first book, John.
Uh-oh.
the last expat left. I think that's like a story about succession planning. I think that'd be awesome. Very powerful. All right, we'll go to the rapid round then. John, what is a book that has shaped the way that you think?
Gosh, there's a few good books I've read recently, but I mean, the one that probably most shapes the way I think, and it's an old, and I have no idea if any of your, I mean, I've listened to many of your shows, but I don't know if anybody's brought this book up, Meditations by Marcus Aurelius.
Ah, yeah.
So if folks, you know, it's one of those books that, I mean, it's 1900 years old, right? But the amazing thing about that book is it's essentially, as Emperor of Rome, he jotted down 12 books that he never thought would be published with just sort of comments on human behavior, how to live a good life, how to behave. And those, of course, have been translated. And the amazing part is when you read them, whether it's for business or life or anything else, all of those truths are as true now as what he jotted down with no expectation of them ever being published 1900 years ago as the, you know, formative emperor in Rome.
Yeah, I think I haven't read it yet. I'm going to buy it. I recently got a book voucher, so I'm jumping on that. Tim Ferriss talks about that book a lot, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. A favorite app or tool that you'd recommend?
So I try to minimize the apps, actually, yeah. Just because of respect to my favorite tool might be time, you know?
Yeah.
But one great resource that I direct people to, which I think is really informative and uplifting, is if you check out informationisbeautiful.net.
Oh.
So it's a site. You can sign up for daily beautiful news on there. And it is an exceptional platform that does amazing, colorful infographics of anything from, you know, carbon footprint to, you know, trade numbers or whatever's in the news. These beautifully designed infographics that are, and then behind it, you can click through. And if you're a data person, you can see all the reference data, or you can just get the beautiful and informative infographic every day.
That's awesome. Thank you. I've never heard of that site. I'll check it out. Hey, John, what's a song that gets you fired up?
Oh, boy, I could give you a list now. maybe some, you know, like, classics in terms of, you know, Eminem, Lose Yourself, or you know, Seven Nation Army with White Stripes. But I tell you, the one that is more unusual, that goes all the way back to when I was much, much younger, was Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby.
Oh my gosh.
After 10 years
of words? You know all the words?
I do. After 10 years of karaoke in Asia with no ability to sing, you can always go to a rap song, and Ice Ice Baby was my solo go-to.
It'll bring the house down. Awesome. And a favorite quote.
Oh, a favorite quote. I think Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, who wrote Le Petit Prince, was, you know, famous for saying, you know, you can, you know, don't, if you want to build a ship, Don't drum up people and give them tasks, but teach them to long for the sea. And that's one that I've leaned on forever. I mean, I'm sort of a horizon person in terms of big picture. And my wife is much more effective operationally. And I think that, I really believe strongly that if people have the big picture in mind and understand how they connect, smart people will figure it out and find a way. So I've leaned on that thinking for many years.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you for that. Now, John, if our listeners are inspired by your story and want to see what you're up to over in Canada, how can they connect with you?
Sure. I mean, LinkedIn is obviously the easiest. You can find me there and send me a note there. Happy to connect with anybody. That's probably the easiest way.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. There were so many, topics we could have gone down, but I think we got a really lovely overview of like your passion for life, really going into action, like just try things, take risks. Like you can always return home, and how expansive travel is for building a great life. So thank you so much for being part of this, John. It was great to chat with you again.
Pleasure to be here, Leanne. I love what you're doing, and it was my absolute privilege to join you today. Thank you.
Awesome. You're the best. Thank you so much for tuning in to Work and Live Large. I really appreciate you. If you know someone in your network and you think, oh my gosh, they've got so much potential, like I want them to live and work larger, send them this episode. I think they might appreciate it. I also appreciate hearing from you, your feedback, your thoughts, your questions, anything. You can shoot me an email, hello@leannehughes.com, or find me on LinkedIn, just search for Leanne Hughes. Stay up to date with all the episodes by heading on over to leannehughes.com/subscribe, and all the best with your week as you go around living it up.